All right, good afternoon, everybody. It is Tuesday afternoon, 12:40, and we're picking up where we left off in Chem 12, looking at electrophilic aromatic substitution reactions. Just a word of note, too, as we're coming off the weekend, yesterday I was able to get the second exam, the spectroscopy exam, up. And so that exam is available. That runs through Monday. And you guys, same rules, same sort of thing. You guys are expected to be able to work together on that, particularly on that spectroscopy problem, the last one, the big problem, because the big problem is a difficult one. I gave a bunch of hints and I actually went through it and I put a few more hints on it last night as I was finishing it up. And what I'll say is that there's a couple of answers that I will accept for that one as being correct answers, because it's really the last little bit of that is hard to distinguish between. But be sure that you go grab that rubric, the spectroscopy rubric, and use that spectroscopy rubric as a checkoff sheet as you're doing that problem to make sure that you get all the components to that problem. Because remember, I'm grading more on process than I am on the final answer on that. Okay, let's do a screen share here and see if this is going to work. It worked this morning. I upgraded all of my computers and my iPad and my phone. And this morning I had, there it is, there's a glitch. Okay, it's working now. It's got a new permissions thing that it asks when I go through and I try to do the screen share. It's telling me that something is trying to access one of the ports of my computer and it wants to allow it or disallow it. Okay, so what I wanted to do really quick was, just go back over where we left off, just to refresh our memory of electrophilic aromatic substitution and what we were doing, and then jump forward from this. So what we had ended, or where we had ended, we had looked at taking a substituted benzene and substituting it with a bromine. And the bromine we found went into the ortho position or into the para position. And we said that when that reaction took place, that what happened is the electrons from the aromatic ring reach out and grab the bromine. And we go into a cationic transition state here, or actually intermediate, the transition states here, but this is our intermediate. And that intermediate has resonance where the positive charge can flow around the ring system. And what we did is we looked at that transition state in regards to the intermediate, and said that the transition state is closest in energy to the intermediate. And so the stability of this intermediate most greatly affects the transition state. And we said that if the R group here had electron withdrawing groups on it, that that would destabilize a positive and increase the energy of the system. And if we had an R group, which was an electron donating group, that would stabilize the positive. It would add electron density to the positive, and that would decrease this and speed up the reaction. So electron withdrawing groups slow it down, electron donating groups speed it up. And we took one look at an electron donating group, a methoxy group, and we looked at the resonance contributors and where that positive charge shows up and how that positive charge can show up and directly be contributed to from the oxygen. And in an electron withdrawing group, what we showed is that the positive charge falls directly below the electron withdrawing group and is destabilized by the electron withdrawing group. So this is why electron donating groups stabilize. They give us an additional resonance contributor, while electron withdrawing groups destabilize because they pull from an already existing hole, essentially. All right, and then we talked about different electron donating groups and their strength, because they are related directly to the rate of this chemical reaction. So we can go and put these different substituents on it, measure the rate, and we can tell how strongly something is an electron donating group. We can also put deactivating groups and we can measure how slow the rate gets. And we can then rank our electron withdrawing groups in terms of being the most deactivating to the least deactivating. So we had all these substituents and groups that we talked about. And what we said today, that when we came back, that I wanted to investigate this aspect a little bit more and the nature of why substituents go in the ortho position and the para position, and in some cases, the meta position. And so I want to look at those ideas now and why those substituents can show up where they do. So let me take a couple of minutes to look at this mechanism. So let's start by making a new set of notes here. And this will be ortho para directing groups. Okay, so when we look at a reaction, let's take an electron donating group, for example. And let's do the reaction where we use Br2 and FeBr3, ferric bromide. And what's going to happen is the bromide is going to bind to the iron, which is going to create a partial positive charge out here. And this is going to reach out and grab that partial positive charge. When it does so, we will create a positively charged intermediate. And then eventually what's going to come in is the other bromide, which is going to act as a base to pull that proton. To do the substitution. But what we're going to find is we're going to find that we're also going to get parasubstituted. And so we get ortho and para, but no meta. And so we want to actually analyze all three substitution patterns and see what it is about these three substitution patterns that ortho is acceptable, para is acceptable, but meta is not. So why is meta destabilized? So if we go through that resonance, and basically what we need to do is we need to take each one of the structures and look at the stability of the intermediates. So we'll look at the ortho intermediate. We'll look at the meta intermediate. And we'll look at the para intermediate. And what we want to do is we want to analyze the stability of each one of these intermediates. So we want to see what resonance contributors each one of these intermediates have and why some of these might be more stable than others. Okay, making sense so far in what we're looking at? So this takes a while to sit and draw out the resonance. It's not a quick thing. It takes a little bit of time to just sit down and look at each one of the resonance contributors. I'll first take the electrons from the oxygen and push them in and look at that one resonance contributor. And then what I'll do is I'll focus on this bond over here. This bond also could have donated to that positive charge. But I'll have to use two arrows in order to indicate that. positive charge now winds up in that position. Oxygen now has its lone pairs back. And then one more resonance contributor here, where that double bond swings over that way. And the positive charge winds up on the right-hand side. Okay. And that's the whole set for ortho. So let's not worry about the stability just yet. Let's go ahead and analyze resonance contributors for all three, and then we'll compare all three, and they'll all be on the screen at the same time. Now, I know I'm going a little bit quick in drawing the resonance contributor, so let me know if I'm outpacing you too fast. I'll slow down a little bit. Okay. Now for the next one, notice the location of the positive charge. The positive charge is in the metaposition to the oxygen, and there's no way for the oxygen to directly contribute to that positive charge just yet. The only thing that I can do is swing the double bond here over. And so we'll draw it that way. That brings the positive charge over to the left-hand side. And then the next contributor for some reason, there we go. That'll work a little bit better. Just wasn't able to draw exactly the way that I wanted to there. And the positive charge now resides at the bottom of the ring system. And there doesn't appear to be any more resonance contributors because I can't push through the sp3 hybridized carbon with the bromine and hydrogen on it. And so I'm limited to only three resonance contributors when in the metaposition. In the paraposition, we'll start off by moving the double bond. That'll place the positive charge directly at the base of the hydroxyl group. I can then use the lone pairs in the oxygen to push into that positive charge. That puts the positive charge directly on the oxygen. And then one more resonance contributor, where I can push the positive charge down into the lower left-hand corner, putting the lone pairs of electrons back onto the oxygen. And I think that's everything that I can do there. Okay, so what's the first thing that you note when you look at these, when you look at these as a set?
Meta Meta is out.
Meta's out. Why is Meta out? I'm going to interpret that to be, see, Meta is out, higher energy, less resonance. These guys here are more stable and more stable. We could say that they each have four contributors, right? So ortho has four contributors with positive on oxygen. Same thing here. Para has four contributors. With the positive on oxygen. And so it's really this contributor here and this contributor here that are the extra contributors. So PokeMeta has less resonance contributors, and also Meta's resonance contributors don't incorporate the oxygen, which is exactly right. Yeah, and JC2, ortho and para, same number of contributors. More stabilization on the ortho and para, Drew, and the ortho and para, Drew's got that one. So yes, absolutely. All of that is spot on for what we're seeing with this. I would add one other thing. How is the oxygen acting in the ortho and para? Well, how would we categorize oxygen as a group? Would we categorize it as an electron donating group or electron withdrawing group?
It's acting as an electron donating group, but on the Meta one, it can only act as a withdrawing group through induction.
Spot on. BB's got it just right. Okay, so I love that. That was very succinct and exactly what I was looking for. I was gonna lead to that answer, but BB was already there. She needed, they needed no leading. What I would say here is that is absolutely correct, that oxygen here is acting as an electron donating group through resonance. In the ortho position, electron donating group through resonance. But in the Meta position, oxygen cannot donate through resonance, and therefore its only action is to be electron withdrawing through induction. So here what we would say, just as BB said it, this is oxygen equals electron withdrawing group by induction. And so it's not only the number of resonance contributors, it's also what the group is functioning, or how the group is functioning. And that the group is actually changing how it's functioning. In two of these, it's stabilizing. And in the third, it's actually destabilizing. It's not even that it's just worse because there's less contributors. It's worse because it's actually destabilizing. So spot on target. Okay. And that's why we see both ortho and para. Now, we haven't talked about how much ortho and how much para we observe in these. And we will in a little bit. We'll look at some data in a little bit to get that sort of idea. But let's take now and look at a different reaction. Let's look at this one with a nitro group. And let's do the same reaction where we're brominating doesn't really work with the nitro group, but we can look at a nitration reaction, HNO3, reacting with H2SO4. And in this case, the intermediate looks like this. It's NO2 and H, and the positive charge. And that's our sort of intermediate on our way to making these derivatives. However, I should change this because we don't really see ortho. What we see is meta. So I'm going to swap it out for this one. And we'll say meta only. No ortho or para. And so why? Why do we see only meta and not see the ortho or para substituents? And in order to justify that, again, we have to go through and consider the three possible intermediates and look at what's happening in each intermediate. So we'll look at the ortho. We'll look at the meta. And we'll look at the para. Okay. So in analyzing the resonance for these, we go through and we just do the exact same thing, same analysis we just went through. We just have to sit down and draw them out. And I know it's a lot of drawing, but there's no other way to analyze it. And fortunately, there's a little less drawing with these because they each only have three resonance contributors. So there's the first one. Go through, do the same thing with the second one. And as I said, they each only have three, so there's no fourth resonance contributor in these. And then what I'm going to ask you to do is to sit back and take a look at these and see if you can come to any conclusions. Regarding the resonance contributors. So there's the meta. And now finally the para. Last drawing. Positive charge right hand side. NO2. And we're done. Okay, so we get them all on the screen at the same time. All right. They all have the same amount of resonance. Okay, so BB's ahead of me. BB has ortho and para placed charge directly underneath the electron withdrawing group. Yeah, if you take a look at the electron withdrawing group. And in the ortho, you'll see that the electron withdrawing group, that the para, that the positive charge is directly beneath the electron withdrawing group. And you'll also see that in the paraderivative, and that those two structures constitute bad interactions, where you have a positive charge directly underneath an electron withdrawing group. And when you look at the meta, what happens with the meta, although there's a positive charge missing, is that the meta has the positive charge developing to the right, to the left, and para to the electron withdrawing group, but never directly underneath the electron withdrawing group. We don't get these bad interactions that happen in the ortho and para substituents. And so while there's no good resonance in the meta, at least there isn't bad resonance. And so it's like the least bad of the different possibilities. So this is the best possible out of a number of bad situations. So I hesitate to put blue on it to say, you know, usually we're using blue for something that's stable and red for something that's unstable. It's not that it's super stable to begin with, but it is the least of the bad situations, and therefore it is the one that is the most energetically favorable. And that's why it goes that direction. So what you see is that when we take and we look at the two possibilities, an electron donating group on the aromatic ring system allows for positive charges to develop here, or what we could say is we develop positive charges partial here, here, and here, allowing for substitution in these places. So this is the ortho and para. And when we have an electron withdrawing group, that the electron withdrawing group, when substituted on the ring system, promotes positive charges that fall in these locations, allowing for substitution in the meta positions. And so electron donating groups are what are said to be ortho-para directors. And electron withdrawing groups are meta directors. Because of where they can stabilize positive charge the best. In addition to this, we say that electron donating groups are activating . They lower the activation energy by directly stabilizing the positive charge. And that the electron withdrawing groups are deactivating. And they do this by raising the activation energy barrier. By destabilizing positive charge. So it's not just the fact that electron donating groups are orthopara directors. They also make the reaction go faster. And electron withdrawing groups are meta directors, and they also slow the reaction down. So both things are happening simultaneously. Question.
So if you toss them both in a ring and you make them fight, what happens?
Well, what happens is the stronger electron donating group directs. So that's a great question. So what happens if we put two things in a ring at the same time? What is going to be the directing group? And the directing group turns out to be the most stabilizing group, the group that is the strongest electron donating group. That's what winds up happening there. So yes, that absolutely happens. And we're going to look at that. In addition to looking at that, let me give you another piece of data. Let's look at a nitration reaction. So let's take and look at R being nitrated with HNO3 and H2SO4. And what we'll do is we'll look at the percentages of nitration. We'll look at ortho, meta, and para as a function of the R group. How much of each of these do I see based on the R group itself? So in order to do that, what we'll do is we'll do percentages by looking at R group this way. Let's take a look at a methyl. That when R is a methyl, what I see is 58.5%, 4.4%, and 37.2 in terms of the nitration. So obviously, when the R group is a methyl group, the major product is going to be the ortho-substituted product. As I change that and go to an ethyl group, which we don't think of an ethyl group as being that much larger than a methyl. But this will give us a good idea. So at ethyl, it goes to 45, 6.5, and 48. 0.5. Okay, so all of a sudden, we went from the major group here as being major in the ortho position to para becoming the major position. So what do we think happened? It's not any more electron donating. Methyl and ethyl are about the same. AJ Steerix, I agree. When you look at this group, the sigma bond allows for free rotation. And that means that this guy acts like a little propeller. That's putting steerix into these ortho positions. And as it puts more steerix on these ortho positions, it makes the para more predominant. And so it is indeed steerix. And we can see those steerix play out as we go to larger groups. So we can go to a isopropyl and look at the percentages, which are 37.7 and 62.3. And then finally, the tertiary butyl, which is sort of like our ultimate big blocking group. And when we go to a tertiary butyl group, percentages go to 15.8, 11.5, and 72.7. So you can see that we always get a little bit of meta. We get all three derivatives. In every case, we get all three derivatives. But the percentages change according to how much sterics there are. And so sterics is a driving force as well in terms of these. It's not just electronics and electron donating groups. It's also in regards to how much sterics are there that are on the molecule as to what we see happening. So this is terp butyl.
If you put another phenyl group on and you made it biphenyl, would it do the same? Would it be worse than terp butyl, or because of like resonance, maybe in lower percentages?
That's a great question. And I think that if we made it biphenyl, it's not a group that is listed in our table. So now we've got another question. When we go back, our table was on the other chart. Here was our table. And what we had was activating groups that had lone pairs. And those lone pairs are directly conjugated, or an R group, which is electron donating by induction. And then chlorine, bromine, and iodine, they're in the orthopara directing side, but I did them in red because they slightly deactivate because of they're both inductively withdrawing, but resonance donating. And so because of their resonance donating ability, they direct orthopara, but because of their inductive withdrawing, they slow the reaction down a little bit. So these are ones that slow things down, but will orthopara direct. So just a little side note there. On the deactivating side, we had things with positive charges or highly electronegative carbons that are inductively withdrawing. All of these groups here are electron withdrawing groups, but we didn't put an aromatic ring into it. So that means that what we would need to do is we would need to go back to the biphenyl and ask the question, well, what happens with biphenyl? And now we have some sterics and some electronics to maybe consider. And we would have to decide on whether or not it's going to go in the ortho, meta, or para position. And we would have to analyze all three. So can anybody just take a look at it without me having to draw a whole ton and take a guess as to what might happen? Because I can see here that I'm going to have to draw a ton in order to be able to demonstrate what happens with this. But what do you think is going to happen? Let's say that we're just going to do a bromination. We're not going to nitrate it. We're going to brominate it because that's easier to draw than the nitro group, FeBr3.
I'm going to guess ortho.
You're going to guess ortho? Why ortho? Not meta? You need to decide whether the ring is an electron donating group or a withdrawing group. What is it?
Electron donating, maybe.
Maybe. There's no conviction there.
The whole thing's conjugated, right? So
it is.
So in that regard, like, because which one is the electron donating? Because they would both act like, I guess, the opposite of the other one.
Okay.
So I would say donating.
Okay, I like what I'm hearing out of everybody. I'm just going to turn this straight up and down because I'm going to treat the top ring as the substituent and the bottom ring as the ring that I'm substituting. In reality, they're equivalent and I could be working on either ring. Now, when we look at an oxygen as a substituent, maybe, and we'll put a CH3 group on it, and it's connected through the oxygen. We know that this is an electron donating group by resonance, right? And it's an electron withdrawing group by induction. So we know the nature of that guy and that it has these dual roles. Do we know the nature of an aromatic ring system? as a substituent?
Doesn't it do both?
Wait, describe more. Doesn't it do both what?
Can it do both by resonance, electron withdrawing and donating?
Yes.
And same with conduction?
Not exactly. You're close. You're very close. It is an electron withdrawing group by induction. That happens, let's color code. That electron withdrawing group nature happens because by induction, because of the sp2 hybridized nature of the carbon. And as you change hybridization, remember that as you go from sp3 to sp2 to sp, things become more electron withdrawing. With sp3 being donating, right? And so it's electron withdrawing by induction. We can show it that that substituent can be, if I have, let's put a positive charge here, that I can resonate to the positive charge. And because of that, it can act as an electron donating group by resonance.
So it is ortho para directing.
And one more, if I have a positive charge here, negative charge. If I have a negative charge here, then I can push that negative charge into the ring system and it can be electron withdrawing group by resonance. And so what Bibi said was actually correct, that it can do almost everything. The one thing that it doesn't do is it doesn't do electron donating by induction, because it can't do that. There's no way to swap it around and have it be an sp3 hybridized carbon that could be donating by induction. So it can only be withdrawing by induction. But this means that that we are electron withdrawing by resonance and electron donating by resonance, depending upon what we're looking at. And so are we dealing with positive charges or negative charges when we're looking at our intermediates and what was going on back here?
Positive charges.
All positive charges, right? So that means that we're really concerned with this model. And this, we're concerned with these two. Now, which is the stronger effect? Resonance or induction?
Always resonance.
Always resonance. So that means that the aromatic ring system is going to be resonance stabilizing the positive charge. And that is going to make it an ortho para director and an activating group. And then the question is, are we going to see more ortho or are we going to see more para? So now we need to look at it and think about sterics. Remember that the system is flat, sp2 hybridized and highly conjugated. And that it doesn't want to go out of flat because that breaks the conjugation. So if I take and try to substitute in the ortho position here, that's going to cause this molecule to twist. And in causing it to twist is going to break conjugation, and breaking conjugation will not allow it to be electron donating. So that means that predominantly it's going to go in the para position. So what we're going to see here, what we would predict, is that if we took this molecule and we tried to brominate it, we would predict that it would brominate in the para position, would be the major product. You might get some ortho, you'll get some meta, but the major is going to wind up being the para.
Jason, just a question about biphenyl. When you have just biphenyl, like conformationally, are they going to like not tend to be orthogonal to each other, like the planes of each phenyl ring? will they end up like lining up because they have conjugation between the two, or will they rotate it?
They will not be orthogonal to each other. They'll not be perpendicular to each other. What they will try to be is coplanar. However, the two hydrogens act like little propellers and have a very difficult time. They overlap and there's sterics there between the two. So they're bent a little bit. They're not perfectly flat, but they're seeking to be flat. They're just being bumped because of the sterics. So they're definitely not trying to be 90 degrees to each other. Okay. Something else that I was going to do. Okay, so we've got all the numbers. We understand size, that anything larger than a methyl directs for the major to be para. And a methyl is not very big, so any substituent bigger than methyl, though, directs para. Methyl and smaller will allow ortho to be the major product. The only thing that I'll say about that is the ortho product is the major, but why is it the major? Is it the major because the methyl is so small, or is there another reason that that's major? Can you see something else that might be going on here? Sterling, you're muted.
I know, I don't want to answer every time. It's donating group by induction.
No, this isn't, this has to do with statistics. Keegan put most stable resonant structure. Not exactly. How many ortho positions are there? There's two ortho positions. So if I took and I split this number almost 60%, that means I'm getting 30% here and 30% here. That's leading to a 60%. The para is still more predominant, happens more frequently. It's just that I have two positions here that I can substitute. And the second I get any sterics, this drops below the substitution at the para position. And so what we would say is, regardless of what's going on here, any small amount of sterics really influence this, and para is the predominant. However, when the sterics are small enough, the two of these add up to give me the major ortho substituent by adding together and having twice the number of times that it can substitute.
So if you had two methyls, one that was taking up the para position and the other was taking up the adjacent meta position, right, you would predominantly have a para product.
Oh, so you're asking me, what happens if I do this? Where that's going to go. Yeah, okay. So here's the way that I start to tackle this is I look at the group, and that group is directing those two positions and that position. And then I look at this group. This group is also an ortho para director. And it highlights all three. So what we would see is probably because of the sterics between these two and this position, that predominantly what I would expect is that the major product would look like this, and you would not be able to distinguish position A, position A, position B. You basically have two positions, and that position A would be major, because it would have less sterics. Both groups are directing to the same position. And that because of the sterics, that this guy would be minor. That would be the prediction. Okay, let me ask another question then. What about if I have a group there and a group over here? This is a methoxy group. and I look at brominating. Now what do I expect to see? How do we do this? And what we find is that the stronger electron donating group, or the stronger directing group, directs. So what we would find is that this group here is acting as an electron withdrawing group. That is going to target the meta position. So that group is going to want to place something here, but it's a deactivating group and is not stabilizing. The stabilizing group is the methoxy group, and it is directing ortho and para. And so we would take a look at the ortho para director as being the major director, and we would go for where the sterics are the least once we pick out those three positions. So the sterics would be the least given those three positions. They would be sort of split between the two. I don't know which would have, yes, I do. I'll show you. I would go for this as being the major. And minor being the other one. Okay, now why did I do that? The reason is that this group here is similar in size to isopropyl, while this one is similar in size to ethyl. And when we went back up and we looked at the numbers, what we found was that the ethyl group being the smaller group, isopropyl being larger, there's a pretty big steric factor in going to the isopropyl group. And so I would say that the ethyl group has less sterics than an isopropyl. And tracking those, we would put this guy here next to the smaller group. And here we could say that's our larger group, that there's more sterics in the right-hand product. So both using sterics and electronics to decide where the group goes when there's multiple groups in play. All right, let me, we got so much more to do here, which is really fun. How much more can I do? Let's see, maybe I can get through this chapter. Let me ask you about this reaction. If I treat this with H2SO4, what happens? Just now, Keen, treat it with acid.
The pi bond, oh wait, no reaction?
No, you're right, keep going.
Okay, the pi bond grabs the hydrogen from the acid.
Okay, and I create a carbocation. And then what I would have is, if there was some nucleophile, the nucleophile would then attack that carbocation. And so we could say that that nucleophile would be, in this case, we have the conjugate of the sulfuric acid, and that could bind to this, and we could then get, this is transient, so we don't really make this where it sticks around for any length of time. Usually some other substituent comes in and displaces this. And yet we can see that that would add across. But what's important here is this. This is important. That this is a carbocation that winds up being created here. Why is that important? Well, because of this reaction. When you take H2SO4 and place a double bond in H2SO4, the double bond attacks the proton and goes through the carbocation. And so what winds up happening is we get a carbocation, which is now sitting here. And as we know, aromatic rings do what's called electrophilic aromatic substitution, electrophilic. So they are acting as a nucleophile on an electrophile. This is the electrophile itself. And while the electrophiles that we showed previously were nitrate, the nitro group, and bromide and other halogens, in this case, what winds up happening is the exact same thing, only it does it making a carbon-carbon bond. And then what happens is some base in solution pulls the proton, giving the electrons back, and we wind up substituting the aromatic ring with a carbon group. This reaction is called a Friedel-Crafts reaction, and it's a Friedel-Crafts alkylation. Friedel-Crafts reactions are ways of making carbon-carbon bonds with aromatic ring systems. And all you need to do it is you need to create a carbocation. You take all the ways that we know to create a carbocation and you can do a Friedel-Crafts alkylation reaction. And what we're going to see is that there are some ways that we can create carbocations that we didn't know of yet. So for instance, one of the ways that you can create a carbocation is by taking a halogen and treating it with aluminum trichloride. The aluminum makes such a strong bond with the halogen that the aluminum literally rips this chlorine off as a really strong Lewis acid. It rips off that chlorine and creates the carbocation. And so this is another way of creating carbocations by using a Lewis acid, where we can do Friedel-Crafts reactions by taking the, let's put one more bond in here, taking the halogen, reacting with aluminum trichloride for 5 hours. And what we get is we get this guy. And that guy. If we do it at minus 6 degrees C, we get about 60% to 40%. If you do it at 35 degrees Celsius, you get pretty much the opposite. Do you know where this product is coming from?
The rearrangement, right?
Yeah. It's coming from the primary carbocation and the hydride shift that occurs in order to make the more stable secondary carbocation. And so with these reactions, we'll also see carbocation rearrangements with these reactions as they go forward. So all the stuff that we learned about carbocation rearrangements become really, really important. What happens if I take an alcohol and react it with H2SO4 and heat? It's a dehydration, right? Doesn't it go through and just dehydrate? But in going through and dehydrating, doesn't it go through the carbocation intermediate in order to do that dehydration? So here is yet another way that I can make carbocations, that I can take an aromatic ring with an alcohol and acid and I can create the carbocation and we can go through the same reaction mechanism. And so what we're seeing is that there are all kinds of ways of creating carbocations, and each way allows me to do these Friedel-Crafts reactions. So Friedel-Crafts reactions look like all kinds of things, all stemming from ways of making carbocations. Creating a carbocation, the carbocation is a strong electrophile.
Just going back up to what you had for the previous Friedel-Crafts reaction, I know you presented it first at negative 6 degrees Celsius and then 35 degrees Celsius, but if you hadn't given us a temperature, would we still, like, the major product that we would guess is the rearranged one, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Just because you presented it differently. So I was wondering if that was...
No, you're absolutely right. That whenever we could have a carbocation rearrangement to a more stable carbocation, we said that was favorable. And that's because we're mainly operating at room temperature and that those things are so fast at room temperature that they go to the more stable carbocation. So that is absolutely spot on. Okay. Let me give you another way of making carbocations. This is an anhydride. Anhydrides reacting with aluminum trichloride will make something that we saw from spectroscopy, from mass spec. This is an oxonium ion, whereby the resonance tells us that this thing is a carbocation, plus the other piece that it creates is the minus, which is bound up with the aluminum trichloride. So these guys are kind of bound together as the oxygen is bound to the aluminum. The aluminum takes on the negative charge, but this is a way of creating another carbocation. And what we can do with this is same sort of thing. We can take the acetic anhydride react it with aluminum trichloride, and we can put an acyl group, a carbonyl group, onto the aromatic ring system. And that goes through simply by having the positive charge here, the mechanism is that the electrons reach out and grab onto that, creating at first the intermediate that we expect, and then some base in solution, presumably the acetate ion, pulls the proton and takes it back to being aromatic. Okay. So anhydrides are another source and a way of putting on carbonyls, which is really cool. Another way of putting on a carbonyl is with an acid chloride reacting with aluminum trichloride. This pulls off the chloride and creates the same cation again. So this is yet another way to create an acyl cation in order to be able to do that. So now that we know just a couple more of these reactions, what I want to do is I want to look at a sequence of reactions. Let's look at this. Let's take this guy and react it with acetic anhydride in AlCl3, or with AlCl3. This is going to give acetophenone as a product, and then I want to brominate it. I could use AlCl3, but I'll use AlBr3 in order to brominate this, just to keep the halogens the same, although we don't really have to. Now the question is, where is the bromine going to go? Ortho, meta, or para? We need to decide whether this group is an activating group or a deactivating group, and whether it's a meta director. Meta. It's going to go meta. Yes, this is an electron withdrawing group, and so the bromine is going to go meta. Except that's not meta based to where I put it, is it? There we go. What happens if I turn the sequence around? What happens if I add the bromine first? And then add the carbonyl. Now where's the carbonyl going to go? Ortho, meta, or para? Pokey says meta. Is bromine an activating group or a deactivating group? Which list was bromine in? Was it in the ortho-para directors or the meta directors?
It's kind of deactivating, but it's in ortho-para. It just makes it go slower.
As we come back here, it is deactivating because it is inductively withdrawing, but because of its resonance donating ability, and remember the resonance donating ability is always more important, its resonance donating ability allows it to be ortho-para director. And it's pretty darn small, so ortho becomes a predominant position there. But so what we see here is we don't need a calculator, go away. We see that we get, with bromine's bigger than chloride, and bromine is actually considerably bigger than a methyl. Chloride is on par with a methyl. I would say that fluoride is definitely smaller. Chlorine is kind of on par with a methyl group, but bromide is definitely bigger. Bromides are pretty darn big. And so anything bigger than a methyl tends to direct to the para position is the major. So what we would see here is we would see the bromine and then this guy going in the para position, predicted as being the major group. So notice the substitution pattern changed depending upon the order of addition. And then I can direct how I want to direct by putting on the groups first to get specific types of directing. So order of addition matters. For the substitution pattern. So that's kind of cool. Let me ask you a question here. Time. Got to check time. Okay. What if I want to make this? Can I? In small amounts. Keegan wins. I like it. What if I want to make large amounts? I just do lots of little reactions, add them all up.
Wouldn't you just have to do it like that first one that we just did with the order of addition? You have to add
okay.
in the ethyl first.
So let's ask this. That's a great idea. JC, what type of director is this? This is just an alkyl group. Is it an ortho para or a meta director?
I think it's an ortho para.
Yes, it is an ortho para. So this is an ortho para director. What about chlorine? Is chlorine an ortho para or a meta director?
Also ortho para.
Right. So because they're both ortho para directors, then Keegan's right. We can only make little bits unless we find some other trick. So let me show you a trick. Let's take, and first do this reaction. This will put the carbonyl group, the acyl group, in position. And then I'll add chlorine using aluminum trichloride. Now, what type of director is this guy? Carbonyl's what? It's a meta director, right? So if it's a meta director, then the chlorine is going to go in the meta position. So now I've got chlorine in that group, and now all I need is a reaction that gets rid of the carbonyl. And if I could get rid of that carbonyl, then I would be left with the alkyl group. We don't know how to get rid of that carbonyl, but there's a great reaction called a Clemmensen reaction. And I believe this one is the Clemmensen. It uses zinc and mercury amalgam and HCl. And I think this one is the Clemmensen, not the Wolf-Kishner. I haven't used a Clemmensen in a while.
Okay, now you're just making names up.
I know, I like that. One of my favorite things to do. Just to mess with you guys. And by getting rid of the carbonyl, once I get rid of the carbonyl, then I have the substitution pattern that I wanted. So the trick is that I put a meta directing group that I can convert into the group that I want and convert that group after I put in the substitution, after I put in the substituent that I want. So there's two reactions that do this. One reaction is called the Clemmensen. So this reaction takes a carbonyl, we'll do it like this, and this is called Clemmensen reduction. And it uses the zinc and mercury amalgam. And I have to be honest in that I don't know the mechanism of the Clemmensen. I'll have to go look at it. And it will reduce that off. The other one is called Wolff-Kishner. And the Wolff-Kishner reduction has a beautiful mechanism. I think in the interest of time, we'll go through it next time. But this uses hydrazine, H2NNH2, that's hydrazine, and KOH. Solvent's not entirely important in this one. And it reduces off as well. And so either reaction can be used to remove a carbonyl to reduce it down to a simple alkane. So either a Wolff-Kishner or the Clemmensen reaction. And hydrazine is an interesting molecule. It's two nitrogens bonded together. It's actually a pretty toxic molecule, not the funnest thing to work with. One of the largest places that they use hydrazines is within rocket fuels. It's a strong oxidizing agent. And there's a lot of contamination of groundwater because of the use of rocket fuels from hydrazines. But they do some pretty cool things in terms of the reduction in the Wolff-Kishner. I think just to give you an idea of kind of how that works, that one of the intermediates in the Wolff-Kishner reaction is where the nitrogen here forms this intermediate. And what winds up happening I'm going to go back and look at it. I'm not going to do it now because I'm just going to mess it up. I don't want to mess it up. I want to do it right. I'm not going to give you the mechanism now since I can't remember it. We'll be honest. Oops, we just ran out of time. Sorry, can't do that mechanism right now. In any case, what we're going to see is that with these reactions, we're going to find that we're going to be able to construct aromatic ring systems with various substitution patterns, having two and three substituents. And we will be asking you synthesis problems like this, and you'll have to figure out what the order of addition is in order to figure out the right substitution pattern. And so it's sort of that sequencing idea that we did with synthesis before, where we have to figure out what is it that I want to do first, second, and third, what's important to do in going through those and using some tricks like this, like the Clemmensen, like the Wolff-Kishner, to be able to convert a meta director ultimately into an orthopara director. And so some more fun things coming up with these. Where do we go from this? Once we finish these, we're almost done. I've got like maybe another 10 minutes, but I'm going to be respectful of your time. Once we finish these, we jump into chapter 10. That's not chapter 10. What the heck chapter is that? It's conjugated systems. The next chapter is where we start looking at conjugated systems and reactions of conjugated systems. So they're very much related to the aromatic systems in that the aromatic is fully conjugated, but we don't have the aromaticity to contend with. And we can get a lot of rearrangements that happen within these conjugated systems. So we'll look at both additions to conjugated systems, but also how conjugated systems can react with other systems to do paracyclic reactions, reactions that form ring systems. And that's where we start really getting into some fun types of reactions as well. So lots more to come as we get into Thursday, okay? Don't wait too long on that test. It's a bit of a humdinger, especially that last problem. So make sure that you guys are getting together early and work together frequently. Don't just try to do it all in one session. Come together multiple times and tackle them in small bits so that it doesn't get overwhelming, okay? Those would be my recommendations. And other than that, I'll stay on the line if anybody has other any questions. And if not, then I'll see the afternoon group at 3 o'clock. And I got to run because I got a meeting with the dean. Normally I would take questions, but I'm going to go run and jump into that next meeting with the dean right now. Okay. All right, oh. You guys take care.
Okay. See ya.
All right.